Radio Influence. The future is now.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on RadioInfluence.com.
Hey, it's me. It's the Babe Cast. I do love that. Do you not like it? Yes, we love it when I do all of this kind of stuff. We have things to talk about. 24 to 10. Let me be the first person to tell you, I thought the Panthers were going to kill them 45 to 10. Well, who knew it was going to be the other way? And then I had to say, is there some kind of conspiracy going on here? Were they throwing those flags and people didn't like it so much? And it seemed like also the Carolina Panthers got their ass kicked in this. And to see the team that we thought was not going to do any well, and they did so well, and yes, it was great, and wasn't it lovely, and everybody loved it. Well, you know what? If you're Peyton Manning, you're terrific in this, and you're going to go, you'll be gone by the end of this month. You'll be over and done with, but you wouldn't do any of that. We're going to talk with Booger McFarlane, LSU guy, two-time Super Bowl winner. He's going to be on with us. We're going to talk a lot about what it's like to do that. And also, I mean, if you went to the Colts and you won a Super Bowl with him, you're thinking to yourself, how could he ever be playing somewhere else? But after all, it is a business, and that's one of the things that we've been talking about. All right, let me do some other stuff that's going on. By the way, let me just do this. Johnny Football, you, sir, are an asshole, and you've known that, and I've told you that for a long time. But I'm overhearing about Johnny Stupid Manziel. And how dumb are those people in Cleveland? And they thought maybe they could, maybe. And he's another guy that's gone nowhere. But now, all of the documents are coming up. And supposedly, when he slapped a girlfriend again. Now, first of all, did they not have a thing in, remember that thing that happened and they went off the side of the road and they got in a big fight and then people said, was there some kind of thing there? And they said, oh no, we're over it. First of all, why are you still with him after that happened a couple of months ago? Don't you know that's the time? Are you that crazy about his, because he's not making any more money. That money that you saw, you should be happy with it because he's not making any more money. You should have been gone a long, long time ago. And now I have to see it again, and he's going to, quote, kill both of you? Knock yourself right out, but I'm getting out of the car. You know, you're a fool. That's all I know. That's all I can figure out. And my favorite one is, did you see his father? I don't know if John will make it to his 24th birthday. This is my finger sticking up in the air in case you didn't see it. What, wasn't it his stupid father and the mother? Aren't they the ones that have given him everything in the whole wide world? And I'm like, Johnny Football, please. I mean, already Jerry Jones said, I don't want anything to do with you. The other people who need somebody happen to be Houston. Nobody needs to do anything. You need to go to AA. That's what you need to do right now. You need a 12-step program, and I'm not so sure that you can ever come out of that and do it, and it would be nice. But you look at, what's his name, Jamarcus Russell? That's all. Just look at him. And I have to tell you, I was in Seattle. I was there when Ryan Leaf was at Washington State, and I thought he was going to be great. And I saw him, and he was like a nightmare at the Chargers, and I saw him, he was on a radio show, like in the last week. And he said it was like just looking at himself in the mirror, it was the same thing that he did. And for people who don't know, in the last 20 years or whatever it's been, that guy has been in and out of jail for drugs constantly. And he's breaking in and they catch him and they put him back in jail. And he gets out and he does something else. He's ridiculous, that one. And I'm completely over Johnny Football. And guess what? P.S., you suck. You're not very good. You know, it's not like you're 6'5 and 250 pounds. You're like, you're a little bit taller than me. And somehow they have fallen for this. And CAA or somebody got rid of him, right? His agency people got rid of him. He really sucks. And that girl, what's her name, Colleen? You're stupid. You're stupid because you should have gotten out of that car the first time when they drove you off the road and you should have never come back and you're in there and now they're going, oh, he broke my eardrum. Well, you know, what were you doing getting back in the car? How stupid are you? And P.S., if you don't know it, the guy's not making any money. We don't care about that. I'm over them. I have other people to annoy right now. Can we go and talk to Booger? We've got to talk to the guy who's got two, not one, but two Super Bowl champions. It ought to be very good. Booger, let us talk right now, because after all, it is the Babe Cast. My friend Booger McFarland, who I love more than anything else, has come to bother us and give us his perspective of what I thought was the most boring game in the world. I could have gone to sleep for a while. But tell me, Booger, what did you think about the Super Bowl?
Well, you know, babe, everyone thought the Super Bowl was going to be a great game. I thought it was a really good game. Some people, when the offense doesn't take over, they think it's boring. But I think in the end, you know, the better team won. You know, I picked the Denver Broncos to win the game 27-24 during the week. I just thought that there was so much pressure on Cam Newton that he was going against a great defense in the Denver Broncos, and I thought the Denver Broncos were going to be able to exploit him because I thought they were a one-man team. And it sort of reminded me, babe, if you go back to 2002, you remember a team that had a great defense, a quarterback that they said couldn't throw the football anywhere.
Oh, right,
and we
Brad
were going
Johnson.
Against a guy that won the MVP.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds like what happened on Sunday, you know, and the team with the better defense won.
You know what was funny is I kept saying to myself, okay, they can say what they want about Peyton, but I kept going, it's a good D. But I really thought after the way that I had seen the Panthers play, and when they beat the crap, and I do mean when they beat the bejesus out of Seattle, I thought, oh, this team, it's going to be 45-10. And I thought, well, they're going to be on top of this. And it went back and forth, and you kept thinking, He's going to do something, and they dropped the ball again. And that's what happened in this game. And it was boring, but then you really had to wait and see what was going to happen at the very end.
Well, you know, you did, because until late in the fourth quarter, you know, it was still a one-score game. And, you know, to Cam Newton's credit, he didn't get much help during the game. He didn't play well, but he didn't get much help during the game. Ted Ginn Jr. dropped the football. Jericho Cottry dropped some footballs. And Cam Newton himself didn't throw the ball all that well. So I think the Carolina Panthers picked probably the worst time of the season to play their worst game. And it just so happened that, you know, Denver, having the number one defense, made them play their worst game. So I think it was a combination of both. The game was kind of over with about 4 or 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. But when it's all said and done, babe, I think the narrative of this game is going to be two things. Number one, Peyton Manning is going to get a lot of credit for not doing a whole lot, number one. And number two, I think Cam Newton and what happened post-game with his comments, I think those two things are going to be the storylines of Super Bowl 50. Obviously, they're the two quarterbacks. They got a lot of headlines going into the game. But I think after the game, they're going to get those same headlines. Peyton Manning's will be positive. Cam Newton's will be a lot more negative.
What do you think about the situation with Cam? He got up and he walked out, and I just saw him do that. Were there other things that I missed out on that because he walked out, and I thought, is he going to cry? Is he just angry? What happened in that?
Well, post-game, the NFL does something that's kind of weird, babe. They set both teams up pretty much in the same area. So imagine a room, and imagine there's a curtain in the middle of the room. On one side of the curtain is Carolina. On the other side is Denver. So Cam is, you know, he's already disappointed. He's heartbroken. It's really the first time in a big game, if you think about it, in his career that he's lost. Going all the way back to Blinn Junior College at Auburn, he won. And now in the NFL, the first huge game that he's in, he lost. And so he's given his press conference, and there's audio, babe, that you can hear that one of the Denver Broncos DBs was asked a question. And the question was, what was the game plan? And so he's given the game plan where Cam Newton can hear him, and he says something like, yeah, our game plan was to, you know, put eight guys in the box and make Cam Newton beat us throwing the football because we didn't think he could do that. So now he's saying this as Cam Newton is giving his press conference, and Cam can hear this. And I think when Cam heard that, that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, and that's when he said, you know what, I don't have time for this, and he got up and left. So a lot of people think that he didn't, you know, he got up and left because of the reporters. And I'll give him credit for that because he didn't really want to be there anyway. But to his credit, he was sitting there taking the questions. But when he heard the Denver Broncos player say what he said, I think that was the straw that made him get up.
You know, one of the things about this, Booger, you've won two Super Bowls, and one of them was with Peyton Manning. We have to ask you, is this the last time for him? I mean, I don't think he wanted to say it, you know, on Sunday, but I think this has got to be the last time, don't you think?
I think Peyton is done. I think, you know, if it were anyone else, they're taking the 5 minutes last night to do it, but that's not Peyton Manning's style. He realized that Super Bowl 50 is about the teammates. It's about the guys that went to war with him and got him a Super Bowl. And so for him to come out last night or Sunday night on Super Bowl night and say, hey, guys, I'm retiring, that's upstaging the Super Bowl. That's him putting himself in front of the Super Bowl. And I just don't think he would do that. He's too classy of a guy. The Manning family is too classy of a family. But I do think before the end of February, I think Peyton Manning is going to retire. And the reason I say somewhere around the end of February, 1st of March, is because the league year starts March the 9th, I think, and you have to start your salary that day. And so for Peyton Manning, realizing the business side of this, he would probably do the Denver Broncos a real big favor if they knew whether or not he was going to play. So I think somewhere toward the end of February, 1st of March, Peyton Manning is going to announce his retirement. And if you listened all week, you pretty much heard that. I mean, he told Bill Belichick, this may be my last rodeo. He said he was soaking all this in. Think about this. For the first time, we saw Peyton Manning, you know, taking the kids on the field. The kids got a chance to watch him play. So I think if you look at all the signs, all the tea leaves point to Peyton Manning retiring, and he'll probably do it somewhere around the end of the month, the 1st of March.
You know what, Booger? He's a guy that you saw. You won a championship with him with the Colts. But was it weird for you to see him in a different uniform, even though, you know, it's Denver and all that? But it must have been weird since his whole thing was there. Always the Colts.
Yeah, it was very weird. Very, very weird. But the one thing we realized, babe, is this is a business. And, you know, when they pay you $98 million, I'll put on whatever uniform you – I mean, I'll put on a pink tutu if you want me
That's
to.
That's right.
I mean, for 5 years.
I would go naked, too. I would go naked,
well,
too.
Yeah, I mean, well, babe, some people said you do that for free, babe.
Well, all right. That's another thing, but go on.
Well, you know, 5 years and $98 million, he went out to Denver. And then there was something that happened that I thought told people a lot about what Peyton Manning was about. Peyton Manning gave money back this year. He took a pay cut. He said, you know, Johnny Elway came to him, and they said, you know, I need $4 or $5 million. He gave it back to him. Mm-hmm. And Elway built the money back in incentives. But what that did is allow John to go out and get some defensive guys on the defensive side of the football to help them out. So he kind of knew this was his last year. He kind of knew they could win with defense. But it was definitely weird seeing him, who the guy that I played with had a horseshoe on his head, and now all of a sudden he's got this Bronco. You know, one thing you can say is that Peyton Manning loves the horses. The Colts and the Broncos are the two teams he played for.
That's very good for you. You know, what about, can we go back to the first time when you won the Super Bowl? Was it the greatest thing in the whole wide world, or do you see it now and go, that was great, but the other one was better? Do you see them in two different ways, the way that you've done the Super Bowl?
Yeah, you know, because the first one with the Bucs, babe, I was hurt. And, you know, the first one, it was all about Lynch and Sapp and Brooks and those guys that worked so hard and so long, and they had built this team up and turned the franchise around. And I was just happy to be able to help contribute throughout the season to get us to that point, and then to see them win it was a lot of joy for me. And, you know, the second time I won it in Indianapolis, it was more selfish because, you know, when you go to a Super Bowl, you win it, and I got a ring, but I didn't get a chance to play in the actual game. The validation for me, you know, I used to always sit back and think, man, what was that like? I was there, but you didn't get a chance to step across that white line. You didn't get a chance to put the helmet on that night to be on that stage. And I always said, what if? What if I got a chance to do that? And then 4 years later, I get an opportunity to go play for Indy, and I'm starting that game, and I'll never forget it. It was a surreal feeling. It was raining that night, and it reminded me of the night that Tony Dungy got fired in Tampa. Ugh. It was raining. Bay News 9 and the cameras were out there as he was leaving the old one buck, and it was pouring down raining.
Right, and he had that box. Quarter. He had a box, just a
yeah,
box.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, he carried a box to the car, babe, and it's pouring down raining. And I thought about that in the middle of the first quarter in Miami. It's pouring down raining, and I looked over to the sideline, and Tony Dungy's got his hat on, and he, I mean, everybody's getting all wet. But it was one of those surreal feelings that I was on the field in the game, and it was almost like two guys that had, for different reasons, missed out on something,
yeah,
were getting redemption. Because Tony got fired, and he missed out on the Super Bowl with the Bucs. I was hurt. I missed out on playing. And now those two guys get to play together and coach together in Miami, and we both got our ring. So that's the way I look at those two games differently. I wear both rings the same, though, babe. So if you ask me 5 years from now, I'm going to wear both rings the same.
You don't have any extras for me, do you?
I mean, I can always get a copy.
Yeah, well, that's what be nice. Just ship me a nice copy for that one. Booger, let me do some of the guys who were there. First of all, Aqib Talib, is he just like, he starts to speak and they immediately go to a commercial. They're scared to death of what he's going to say. And I'm like, oh, that's what, like, babe, me.
Sometimes, babe, guys play football because it's fun and for the money. Aqib Talib has a life outside of football that I'm pretty sure he enjoys just as much as the game of football. So, therefore, when you see him stand at the press conference and you see him on the field, football is not his life. And so he acts the same way that he normally does in his regular life. So he doesn't change. And so if you were to hang around him, he'd probably be saying some of the same things off the field that he says on.
Yeah.
I do realize that he's one of the better defensive players in this league. And I think as long as his talent outweighs some of the antics that he has, you always see Aqib Talib and you always have your finger on the dump button just in case he says something that is a little kind of wishy-washy.
We can see that. I don't mind it, but it was so – I have to tell you, I really thought it was going to be 45-10. I thought the Broncos were going to get killed in this. And then it was like 7-3 or something, and I said, well, this isn't really – and then I thought, oh, they must come out in the second half. And it was so good, and I thought to myself, is this like – you know, somebody could see it as a conspiracy that they really wanted Manning to win this.
Yeah, I mean, having been in this game a couple of times, I don't think there are any conspiracies. Denver was the better team last night. And there's an old attitude, babe, that I think that you'll know this being in the Tampa Bay area. You know, you've been around the Rays, and the Rays won and went to a World Series with pitching and defense. The Buccaneers went to a Super Bowl with defense.
Mm-hmm.
Good defense always beats good offense. No matter, I don't care what the sport is, good defense will always beat good offense. And I think last night was another referendum on that. The team with the better defense won. And you know, it may not have been the prettiest Super Bowl. There were 18 penalties in the game. It may not have been the greatest halftime show, although Beyonce was looking mighty
she
fine.
She was looking fine, I'll give you that, yes.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, did you see the thighs on her, babe? But
well,
I digress.
You know, can we, and not, but please go right ahead, because I thought she was terrific in what she did in that. But please go ahead. Yes.
Yes. And you know, the game may not have lived up to the game last year as far as, you know, the final play of the game and its drama. But I think when you have the two best teams, you have to admire the intricacies of the game. And for me, it was the defensive side of the football, watching both teams, the chess match, watching Cam Newton try to will his team to win. But in the end, as I said, the narrative of this game is going to be Peyton Manning and how he rides off into the sunset in the Denver Broncos defense. And a lot of people are comparing their defense to ours of 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my response to that. The 15 Denver Broncos had a great season. Let's see if they have a great run. We had a great run of about 5 years where we were ranked in the top three
right.
in the NFL. They've had one single year. So, for 1 year, they were the best, and they deserve to be ranked up there. But let's see how they compare the next couple of years.
You know, when you talk about that, I think about Newton, because I think of him walking away, whatever happened, and I thought to myself, you don't really understand that that doesn't mean you're going to be here next year or even 5 years from now. You were there and change it. And, you know, they've got all these guys. Oh, they got this guy got cut and all that. But their offensive line was terrific, but they weren't so great in the offensive line when they really needed him in Super Bowl.
Not at all, because their tackles, the guy – Rimmers, and then the guy Michael Orr, who they made the movie out the movie about the Blind Side, he was awful last night. And DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller, they were dominating. And you know, Von Miller's a free agent, babe. So I think John Elway is going to have to hand him a blank check and just
yes.
say, "Hey, fill it in," because he was a Super Bowl MVP in the biggest stage of the biggest game, came up big last night. And Carolina's offensive line wasn't very good, but you know what? The entire team didn't play well. You know, they didn't run the ball well. Cam Newton didn't play well. Their best offensive weapon, Greg Olsen, he didn't play very well. And he was covered by Aqib Talib, by the way. So just to show you how valuable he was. Overall, as I said, Carolina picked the worst time in the season to play their worst game on the biggest stage.
You know, I agree with that, except I really give it up to Denver in that. Yes, they played poorly, but I give it completely to the Denver defense in that. They beat the crap out of him all day long. And usually, you know, one of the things about him, and you saw it all year long, is that offensive line, he could make a sandwich back there before he throws the football. And they didn't give him a chance to do anything, and the ball was flying every which way, and it was their defense. It was just killing them. And no matter what they say about Peyton and how great and how wonderful, that defense is what won it, and they were terrific. I know that. I know all about the defense by now, don't you think? That's one thing.
Absolutely.
I understand.
And listen, no doubt about it. And babe, pressure will always burst pipes. You know, if you want to know what it feels like to have pressure put on you, fill up a water balloon as full as it'll go, and then just squeeze it. At some point, the amount of pressure you put on that balloon is going to make it pop. That's the same sensation you have when you have a defense that's putting so much pressure on an offense. You just squeeze and you squeeze, and at some point, it's going to pop. And I think late in the fourth quarter, you saw last night, you saw the Carolina offense just really pop. They couldn't get anything done. They started fumbling the football. Cam Newton got aggravated. He started kind of pouting a little bit. And that's because of the pressure that defense was putting on them over the course of the game.
You know, let me just do this. I'm going a different way, and that's the SEC Network. You're working for them. When they did, I don't know if it was the draft or whatever it is, but everybody had a different thing. And you were one of those guys where, like, somebody got picked, and then you talked about what they did the whole time as opposed to, hi, this person. It was a different thing on four networks there. But you know what I'm talking about. You were there, and you talked about it was different in the way that the draft was done. It was differently done on that. And I thought that was really good because you gave me information, because I would flip over and I go, well, that's stuff I didn't even know. And, you know, you'd get this guy, oh, he's great, he's wonderful. And yet there were other things that you guys were able to say. Connell always gives me good stuff. And so I thought that was good that you were doing that. I mean, like, I have to wait now. Do you like the SEC, or are you just, that's what you're doing now? I think it's good for you, isn't it?
I enjoy it, babe. You know, when I got done, got done playing football, I always thought that, you know, this broadcasting thing was going to be fun. It was going to be something I could get into. Never in my wildest dreams that I'd go from radio to TV to, you know, being on during the national championship game and things of that nature. ESPN has given me a great platform. And, you know, when they hired me, they told me two things: be informative, have fun, and be yourself. I guess that's three things, but they told me all three of those. And that's what I try to do. I go out and I have fun. And the thing that's wild, babe, is they pay me to talk about football. I mean, can you believe that? That's like paying you to talk about the radio, babe. And they pay me to talk about football. So I get paid to watch football, figure out what's happening and why it happened, and give my expert opinion. And they pay me a lot of money for it. So I pinch myself every morning I wake up.
Well, you see, the difference there is you watch what's going on, and then afterwards I'll go, I didn't see that. Did you see that? That's what is the difference between me and you. You got it, and I go, oh, I didn't remember seeing that at all. But you like doing it. I love talking with you, Booger. It's so great. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for hanging out with me today.
No doubt, baby. Enjoy it. Appreciate it.
Well, we love Booger. I loved him for a long time. We used to do radio together, and it was great to see him again and good to get some insight in the whole thing that we do think it's over for Peyton Manning, and it's okay. We'll let him go and have a good time. That'll be all right. You know what we've got to do now? You know what's coming up now? Yes, it's very exciting right now. February the 15th and the 16th, it's the Westminster Kennel Club. Yes, all the dogs that matter in the whole wide world. And my friend David Fry is going to be there. He's going to be great. You're going to see him. He's the guy you see all the time when it's time for that. So I will love it. And I don't know about you, but I will be watching at 9:00. I will watch the whole thing all the way through because I love those little hounds. I love him more than anything else. David's going to be great. I've known David for a long time. He used to put up with me in Seattle. And then he decided to go to New York. And now he has Cavalier King Charles, which I happen to love too. Let's go talk to David Fry, because after all, it is the Babecast. David, tell me this. How do you know, one of the things, I get so excited. I sit there on Monday and Tuesday. I'm completely in love with it. Why am I this nuts? Could it be because we have dogs, or are we more nuts in the last, 10 years or so over this?
Well, I know I personally am getting more and more nuts through the years, but But I think it's because dogs have this great place in our lives these days. They're not, you know, we don't breed dogs to work for us like we always used to. They're not pulling carts or herding our cattle or protecting our home or getting rats out of our kitchen. We have things that do that for us now. So they're members of our family. They live in our living room. They sleep in our beds. They shed hair on our dark clothes and probably even drink out of our toilets once in a while. But they are members of the family.
You know, one of the things as we get ready for this, what do you have to do to now? I mean, like, it's only next another week or so, 2 weeks to this. But have you done a lot of stuff getting up to this day, to getting ready to the Westminster now?
Well, I'm always trying to stay on top of anything new we might find out about breeds. But we also, this year, have seven new breeds or breeds that are newly eligible for Westminster. They're not new breeds per se. Some of them have been around for hundreds of years. But I got to find out what they're all about, and because we don't get to see them very much during the course of the year. So I've been spending a lot of time working on that in the hopes that I know how to say Bergamasco and Berger Picard correctly.
You know, one of the things that's funny, because I wrote down new dogs and I said I wanted to ask you about that. They're dogs that we do or don't know about, or is there a certain time when you say, okay, we will put them in Westminster? How does that happen?
Well, some of them are dogs that we know about and some of them aren't, because they've been off in some other country, you know, their native lands, as it were, and they just now are getting enough of them in this country, having a good geographic distribution and having a parent club like the Bergamasco Club of America that watches over them and advocates for them in this country. And then at that time, the AKC, the American Kennel Club, will say they are now eligible for dog shows. And since Westminster is a member club of the AKC, that means that these dogs are now eligible for our show. So we got seven of them this year. It's amazing. 199 different breeds and varieties eligible this year.
Do you have any that don't, that, like, I don't want to say, I mean, you have new dogs, but you have dogs that aren't there anymore, or you've decided not to in the last few years? I don't know how that works.
Well, we invite them. It's an open process. And we do have two breeds this year. There are two breeds at Westminster that are not going to be represented in the entry, but they are still out there. They're relatively newly recognized breeds, so there just aren't that many of them in the country, and it just worked out that they didn't. That none of them showed up, so we will not have a Chinook, we will not have a Norwegian Lindehund this year. So it's too bad. We'd like to see them all for everybody, but maybe next year.
You know, when we do this, I mean, what's it like to get in there? Because, yes, it comes up, you know, the Monday and Tuesday, yet people go before because they see, you know, the dogs. By the time we get there, we see all the breeds. They're sitting there, they go in for a Brittany Spaniel, and they see all the Brittanys that are there that day.
That's right. They're all lined up and along their bench, so people can walk through there and get up close and personal with these dogs. You can't do that with LeBron James,
right. But
you can do that. You can do that with the Brittany, or you can do that with the Irish Setter, or the German Shepherd. You can get up close and personal, hug them, pat them, talk to them, talk to the owners, talk to the breeders, find out about these breeds. Maybe you're just doing it out of curiosity. Maybe you're doing it because you're trying to find a breed that might be right for you and your family. And that's the great thing about Westminster, is it provides that kind of educational opportunity.
I think one of the things that you do, it's Angels on a Leash that you do. Is there a thing in there too where you tell people, if you have kids, you need this dog, or you need this dog, or something like that? I mean, is there something about that, that this dog has to run, so if you have a bunch of kids, let them run? Is that the way you do it for them?
Well, it's a two-way process. You know, you need to know. You want people to get a dog that matches their lifestyle. And that way, they'll be prepared to take care of that dog for the rest of its life. If you get this little 4-pound ball of fluff and you don't know what it's going to grow up to be, you're going to be in trouble. Some of those little 4-pound balls of fluff might grow up to be a 6-pound Pomeranian.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them might grow up to be a 90-pound Akita. And if you're not prepared for that, if that isn't what you want, and suddenly the dog takes up too much room, the dog has too much of activity need, then those are the dogs that end up in shelters. And that's why responsible breeders do such a good job of vetting these dogs and making sure that they're going to the right homes, both for the dog's sake and for the new family's sake.
David, when you see a puppy mill or something like that, and more people are kind of getting away from that, but what do you do with that? I mean, that's what they do. They breed these dogs. They put them in a pet store and do all of that. But is there any way to stop that, or is it just the way it's getting done?
Boy, babe, it's really tough because, you know, you can't help but look at a cute little puppy in a pet store and say, oh, my God, it's so cute and it loves me. And then part of you says, too, I got to buy this dog and get him out of the pet store and get him into a good home. So, you know, that's a tough thing. We need to educate people about when you buy a dog from a pet store, you're supporting increased production of the same where people are out there mass producing these dogs like they're some kind of a product, when in reality it's a living entity that's going to be a member of your family. And you want to get a dog that's going to be healthy, first of all, and is going to be able to withstand anything you can throw at it from what your family activities may be.
You know, David, when you do this, I'm wondering about this. When you do dogs and stuff, are there ones, I mean, they all love you, and I'm sure I love them watching on TV, but are there certain ones that grab you in some way, or you just have so many, that's what you do? I understand that you have dogs yourself, but, I mean, are there certain ones that you think of, oh, 2006 or 2011 was great or something like that?
Yeah, there are a lot of breeds like that that I've come to love through the years. You know, I'm the dog guy. I got to love them all. But in terms of what's right for me, my activity level now is so centered around my therapy dog charity, Angel on a Leash, and getting dogs into healthcare facilities to visit people, to visit kids, to visit families, to visit staff, and make them smile or just feel good about what they're doing instead of thinking about all their challenges. So I want a dog whose temperament it fits that and whose size is such that I can get them to and from there. So that's how I personally look at it, and I think other people look at it that way too. If you're a sedentary person and your main activity is to watch TV at night, you can't get a sporting dog. You can't get a border collie. You can't get a dog that needs to be out and running and getting some exercise. At the same time, if you're a runner, you're not going to be able to get a bulldog. You're not going to be able to get, you know, a little tiny dog that can't keep up with you, or if it tries to, it's going to have some serious issues. So those are just two quick examples of personality and temperament. I think if you watch the dog show, you hear us talk about these dogs and their personality and temperament, and you can imagine how it's going to fit your life.
You know, one of the things when you have Angels on a Leash, and I look about that, let me just tell you, a friend of a friend told me this. They live in a condo. Friend comes to visit, friend of theirs come with them. That one has, I assume it's a seizure, they had said, but they have a little hot dog that comes with it, and she wore the service dog and all that, and the people at the condo went crazy and said, we have to have something from the doctor. And I thought to myself, is that really the way the ADA likes that, or do you have it in a different way? I just, you know, it seemed like they got a little bit nuts when she only went to visit once, and they said, don't bring her back here. But what do you do with that? You know, because...
Well, the ADA needs some help. The ADA needs to get to a position where they have some kind of consistent registration process where when people come in with a service dog and they're questioned about it, that they can say, look, here's his ID card. But the problem with that is there are so many service dogs that are self-trained, that train themselves to take care of their people, whether they're a hearing alert dog or a seizure alert dog. My friend Mike Lingenfelder, Mike and I co-wrote a book called The Angel by My Side about his heroic golden retriever service dog that alerted on him when he was about to have a heart attack, an unstable angina attack. And he could do it in a way before Mike felt it, so that Mike had like a 10 or 15 minute head start on his medications, and it brought it somewhat under control. But the rest, Mike is walking around the rest of the time with this dog as a service dog, and Mike looks like a normal guy. The golden retriever looks like a normal dog. So people who own restaurants or run restaurants say, geez, you look pretty normal to me. You're just trying to scam me to get your service dog in there. And the problem is that so many people are scamming with service dogs now with this psychological dependence deal, that's when they've stepped up and said, you got to have something from your doctor. That's what happened at the condo. But as far as having a legitimate service dog, that's against the law for the condo people to discriminate against the dog in person.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about, I actually talked to the guy from the Puppy Bowl about this too, which is that the last dog that I had was an 11-year-old Cavalier Spaniel, and you know those things. And I knew that he was 11, he was going to live to be 15, he was absolutely great, but I can't do it right now. I can't go through. If they could live as long as me, I could deal with it. But, David, I can't deal with 15 years. I can't deal with 12 years. I'm a nightmare afterwards. And right now I just said, I can't have a dog right now. I just, it blew my, I mean, it takes me like 10 whole years to get it together again afterwards.
I understand totally. I lost two seniors 5 years ago that were the greatest things in my life, and I'm still not over it. But you know what? In the big picture, that's part of the deal that we enter into with these dogs, that they're not going to be here long as us, relatively speaking. But what they give us in the meantime and what we give them in the meantime sort of, not totally, but sort of makes it all worth fighting that battle and facing it at the end as well, knowing that you're taking care of the dog and helping make the right decisions for them.
You're doing the Westminster now, but you're going to stay with NBC. What are you doing after that now?
Well, this is my 27th year doing Westminster. I started doing back in 1990 when both you and I were in Seattle. And this is my 27th and final year. I'm leaving. I have a new position with NBC Sports, which includes doing the National Dog Show presented by Purina on Thanksgiving Day and, quote, other projects. So we'll see what happens with those other projects, but I'm not going away from the dog world. I'm still going to be around, and I'm still going to be advocating for dogs and helping people realize that we should celebrate the dog in our lives and thank them every day for letting us be the person on the other end of their leash. And that's important to me, and I want to keep doing that.
I think that's really great. I sort of love that. Do you think that, you know, if you do it now, does that mean I won't get to see you, or will I see you more now in NBC?
Well, hopefully you'll see me more, and but you won't see me on Westminster, which is, I'm sure about that Tuesday night of Best of Show, I'll probably get a little bit melancholy and start thinking about it. But I've had a great run for 26 and soon to be 27 years. The things that have come to me because of Westminster and my involvement with them have been wonderful and a great part of my life and always.
How many dogs do you have right now?
I have two. I'm like everybody else in New York. I live in a high rise in on the Upper East Side, and I've got a Brittany, which is probably not the greatest dog in an apartment, but she's grown up with us since she was 7 weeks old. She's grown up with a toy dog, my Cavalier, Angel, and the two of them, of course, run the household and own me and do wonderful things in healthcare facilities. We visit the Ronald McDonald House here in New York regularly, where my wife is the chaplain. We visit the VA hospital here in New York City, and we've done the Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in the past and a number of other places. So my dogs are doing great things for people in need, and I'm lucky that I get to go along with them.
Okay, so it's February the 14th and the 15th. That's when it is for Westminster?
February 15th and 16th, Monday night and Tuesday night.
Am I ever going to remember these things?
Three hours live. Each night, Monday night, we have the hounds, the toys, the non-sporting, the herding breeds. Tuesday night, we have the terriers, the working, and the, what else have we got? Terriers, working, and, I don't know.
Yeah, the best
whatever
shows,
the third
yeah.
Is. Yeah, and best in show at the very end. The seven good winners come together at the end, best in show. So that's always the exciting time for us.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I really appreciate your time, David. I know you're very busy, but thanks so much for hanging out with the Babe today.
Babe, it's always my pleasure.
I do love the Westminster Kennel Club. You're going to have a good time. If you've never seen it, sit down and watch it. It's very great. I like to see that. Thank you for that, David. Hey, you know what's coming up next? Or next I'm around to do this? You know what? Jamie Little's going to join us from Fox, because I have to tell you, I know absolutely nothing about auto racing. And then one day I was watching it, and then people came in and they said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm kind of watching auto racing," and people left. They were like, "What is she doing here?" I said, "I don't know. I'm just," and now I've gotten to the point that I don't really care if they come in. I'm watching auto racing. And while I watch the Daytona 500, I got to tell you, it'll probably be here the whole time I'm around. And I think I'm becoming a redneck. And that's what kind of makes me a kind of, well, anyway, Jamie Little's going to join us from Fox because she knows everything. I said to her, I always played baseball when I was 9. She said, I had dirt bikes. I ran around when I was 9. I said, well, we're going to love her. That's what's coming up next week on The Babe Show.
If you know The Babe at all, you know this show never ends.
Don't believe me, just watch.
Follow her on Twitter at RealSportsBabe and subscribe to the show on iTunes. This is The Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
This week on Crush Performance, we follow up the Super Bowl with a look at concussions in sport. Are we doing enough to raise awareness and improve player safety and long-term health? Chris Nowinski, co-founder of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, joins us to talk about their ongoing research into CTE, and we'll look at some potentially game-changing technology as we talk with Dr. Samuel Broud about the new Visus 01 helmet. So join us for a serious look at athlete safety right here on Crush Performance.
Radio Influence.com.